Hello and welcome. It's not sure if my mic's on, double checking. It is. This is going well, I think, with David Cooper, and I'm your host, David Cooper. It's This Is Going Well, I Think, the show where no one's listening, no one cares, where every episode's the last episode. Today, science expert, friend, man I like talking to, Dan Riskin, who's got some wonderful science stories that may or may not have made headlines to discuss with you. And by you, I mean me, while you listen. So here he is, bat biologist Dan Riskin. Daniel Riskula Riskin.
Hi.
I like your green headphones. This is what people don't see. Bright green headphones.
You don't see them because most people don't have them because most people give them to their kids for whom they are intended. But my kids, anyway, I'm using the kids' headphones.
Is that like a gaming headset that you bought for your kids? You're like, go play video games. And then they're like, these are too ugly even for us.
No, it may be that the ugly part is correct, but they weren't bought because they're gaming headsets. Weird, they were bought because they're colorful, and when you have three kids and they always fight over whose is what and all that stuff, it's really helpful if they have three different colors of things. So we've got a black pair of headphones, we've got a green pair of headphones, which I'm wearing, fluorescent green, if you will, and a pink pair, and they don't care. They just wear whatever headphones are nearby, so the color scheme was a waste of time, and now I'm wearing the green one, so who's laughing now, Dad?
Who is laughing now?
Not me.
Do you want to take a brief pause in the taping? I will include this part in the tapings. By the way, did you like the teaser I included in the last taping? Did you get a chance to listen to that?
No, I haven't listened to it yet. What did you tease? Did you include the teaser that we recorded, the teaser?
It was the teaser about the teaser. That was the teaser.
Oh, God, I'm going to listen to it. That's great. That's great.
Audio equipment, which is going to bore everyone.
Oh, yeah. Tell me about audio equipment, because I need better audio equipment. So a company for whom you used to work, one of their producers is switching to a new system.
Oh, Schmelvedia.
It's, yeah, Schmelvedia, the Yiddish radio station, Schmelvedia.
Less Yiddish ever since they canceled my show, but go on.
Anyway, they are using a thing that now I have this piece of equipment that I plug my microphone into, and it sends my voice. No, it sends your voice back to you along with my voice.
You want the clean feed. So
yeah, so I need to know what equipment, what I should buy to replace this thing that I bought for $200 that I've got all my microphones plugged into. I have two mics, but it'd be nice to be able to plug my phone into it too and record phone calls and stuff like that too.
I have just the piece of equipment for you. It's just a little spendy. So I'm like, do I really want to push? And then if you don't love it, I've then pushed a $200-$300, maybe $400 piece of equipment on you.
$400 US or Canadian?
I don't know. I'm looking at the Rodecaster Duo.
The Rodecaster Duo.
It's fucking 500 US.
500 US? That's 700 Canadian.
Yeah. Okay, we'll get you something else. But I think this really is...
But that's the cream of the cream.
If you want two microphones and a cell phone and maybe some audio tracks...
Where you push a button and it plays like a little theme song, that kind of a thing?
You can have that. Yeah, it's got the sound pad. So you can be like, I said science. Ding! This is why I'm not...
I hope... Can you just send me that, what you just did, that noise? I want that on my... That's going to be the first sound that I use. Every time I say something scientific, I'm going to have you saying, I said science, bing! And that's going to be... That's a good sound up right there. You should tease this show with that.
Yes. So, speaking of Schmelvedia, a host that I work with there, Jim Richards, I used to do appearances on his very, very late show.
Yes.
Which then became my very, very late show. And every time I talked about being Jewish on the very late show, he would press a ding, like a bell ding. Ding! And it would be the bell, like, oh, David's talking about being a Jewish again. I now do appearances on his evening show where normal people, no offense to you late night listeners. Well, I mean, if you're listening to this show, you're not normal, okay? And if you think you are, you got to look in the mirror. But... No offense to you.
Yeah, you need to do some journeying to yourself. You need to think about where you, what kind of mistakes you've made. No offense.
Yeah, again, no. I mean, we're here. Again, mistakes were made.
Yeah, big mistakes.
So yeah, he like tried that once in the overnight show and his producer was like, don't do that.
Don't flag the word Jewish because everybody's on pins and needles.
Yeah, you can't be like ringing a bell every time a guest says their ethnicity, especially if they're a Jew. Like, not gonna work. So we don't do that anymore.
That's too bad.
So I'll find you a piece of equipment. But the idea is, the reason you're hearing everything back in your ear is because you want to send the show everything but a copy of itself. But you want to hear the entire show. That makes sense. So like, imagine there's two things going into your equipment right now. There's my voice, so you can hear me.
Yep.
And then there's your voice, so you can hear yourself.
Yep.
That's all fine and well. That's what you want to hear in those bright green headphones.
Yeah, they're bright green and they're great for that.
That's often called the main mix or the mains. So that's like the whole program as you've come to understand it in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I don't want the whole program. I don't want a copy of my voice. So I want what's called a mix minus. You want the mix minus the copy you're receiving.
Right. You want me to be sending you just my voice.
Mm-hmm.
None of the stuff you're sending me.
But the mix that's in your equipment should be a combination of both, because that's like what is on your end, what you want to hear. That's what's live. But what you're sending back should be a mix minus or a clean feed, they call it in the UK. If you ever find yourself doing radio in the UK.
Could happen. Could happen.
You'll say you want a clean feed, not a mix minus feed.
Yeah. And a biscuit.
Exactly. Not a cookie.
Because there, a biscuit. What is it? A biscuit is a cookie, right? There.
And if you ask for some chips, you ain't getting potato chips. That's for sure.
No, that's a mistake I've made while there. If you get fish and chips, they don't give you any chips.
No, they just give you fish and fries.
Yeah.
French fries.
And wrapped in newspaper. I remember when I was a kid, I went to England with my dad and his then wife, and there was a whole gaggle of us, and we all go there. And they're like, one of the things we're going to do in England is go get fish and chips. It is the best thing you'll ever eat.
It's good. It's good. It's not great.
No, it's not even good. It's terrible.
It's good. No, it's good. But it's not like, you know, you can get good fish and chips here.
Yeah, and that's not good either, because fish and chips isn't that good. It's just greasy, wrapped. It's not good.
I like it, but I don't love it. I'm kind of with you in a way.
Yeah, it's not worth traveling for. There's just way better food out there. Like, there's way better food out there.
I feel this way about avocados. They're good. They're like mushy green baby food. They're good. They're not great. They're never great. People are like, go nuts for them. I'm like, they're good. It's good. It's not bad. But I'm not like going out of my way to go to this one fruit store that has these one ripe avocado. Fuck that. Not doing that.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Okay. I respect your philosophy.
Newspaper. That's disgusting. Someone was reading that the day before. And even if they weren't reading it, that ink is rubbing off. Microscopic ink droplets are rubbing off into your disgusting fish and chips.
It's unhygienic.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
We are in agreement.
Good. Well, this is bad radio. We got to argue. It's much better if we get in a fight about something.
I'm not even sure I'll include any of this because the Roadcaster duo. But then there's the thing about, ding, I'm a science man. So I'll have to figure out how to include that.
The ding was funny. Oh, you're going to listen to it. You're going to be like, God, it was better than I remembered it. In the moment, I was too caught up worrying about whether it was good. But now that I just sit back and listen to it, I realize there's gold in those hills.
Do you want to just start fresh?
You could just start as many times as you want, buddy. I'm just along for the ride. You're the boss. I'm just in the passenger seat.
I'll do a quick thing about the audio equipment, and then I'll do the ding thing, and then I'll be like, Dan Riskula Riskin, which is definitely your legal given name by the legal authorities.
Yep.
What are they called? A legal name? Is there illegal names?
Yeah. Yeah, my illegal name is Stick 'em Up.
My illegal name is...
Because whenever I say that name at the bank, I get arrested.
If I sign a check with passes bad checks as my name, is that illegal? Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, but the name of my boarding pass is I Have a Bomb.
And you can do illegal things with your legal name. Like I could forge a check. And then in court, can I say it's not illegal that I wrote my name because it's my legal name?
Your Honor, I did use my legal name. So I think you'll find that trumps the illegality of the action.
There's this schmuck. I read about the story and I think it happened in the San Francisco Bay Area. Even if the story's not true, it's worth telling. But I'm 90% sure what I'm about to say is 80% accurate. With 70% certainty.
Okay, so we're at 0.9 times 0.72%. Yeah, okay, go ahead.
With about a 60% variance.
Plus or minus. Okay,
plus or minus 50%.
I like that we're both multiplying probabilities while you're trying to set up a joke. And we're like, well, let's just do the math on this. Go ahead.
As I'm saying it, I'm like, what would that actually be?
See, that's the key to a good joke. That's the key to a good joke.
The joke is I'm talking mathematical nonsense, but the nerd in me is like, seeing if I can still do the math in my head.
I've enjoyed this joke more than most because of there's been math. There should be more math in jokes. Like the punchline should be, if you divide by the square root.
So this schmuck, you know, in a, I don't know, American, who Citizens United, who knows what Supreme Court ruling it was, but okay. It's common knowledge that corporations were considered people in some Supreme Court law, and I don't know, 60s, 70s, 80s, could have been 90s.
No, it's recent. I think it's like in the OOs, or maybe the 10s.
Okay, so some schmuck, and it doesn't matter when it happened, but it sort of happened, maybe, vaguely. We're not lawyers. That's my favorite acronym of all the acronyms. I am not a lawyer. I anal.
Oh, that explains a lot of text messages I've gotten in the recently. I really misunderstood those.
Now you can withdraw the lawsuit.
Yeah, I have to now. I have to now send some apologies to some different people I work with. Go ahead.
I anal. That works on Grindr and it works in legal circles as well.
Exactly.
So this guy's driving on the freeway, as they call them in the United States. You lived in Ithaca, you know this.
Mm-hmm.
Why do they call it Ithaca? Isn't that like a Roman thing, Greek thing?
Ithaca is the island that Homer was trying to get back to in the Odyssey.
Yeah, we talked about this. Yeah, the Odyssey.
Yeah.
The artist's journey. Forget about it. I'm going to finish this train of thought.
No, I think this is great.
With a 20%.
this has become like, what's that movie with the aristocrats? This is like your aristocrats, but it's a much tamer version, I assume. Otherwise, this is the lawyer acronym will work.
I don't even know why I got off on this tangent, but I know how the story ends, and maybe we can piece together how it began with about a 10% chance of accuracy there.
Sure. So we just multiply that to our 72.
You know, there's a 30% chance of rain right now. It's looking ugly. So the schmuck is driving on the freeway in the carpool lane, and he's got a business or something, I don't know. So he prints out the articles of incorporation of his business, and he puts them on the passenger seat, and he starts driving in the carpool lane.
Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. I love it.
And he gets pulled over, and he loses. And that is like, how did I get started off on this? The legal signature. It's my legal name. I can't do anything illegal when you're using my legal name, Your Honor.
Yes, yes, exactly. But I like that that story. I hope that is true. It's too bad he lost.
It was like a traffic ticket. I mean, it's not, you know, if you murdered someone and then use that as a defense, might be stupid. But I think he just had nothing to lose, wanted to make a little press, and thought it was funny. And maybe he was a liberal like me, and he thought that ruling that basically, I think, it paved way for unlimited campaign contributions from corporations. I think that's what it was. You know what? I'm too much of an idiot to...
Yeah, well, I anal, frankly, so I don't know either.
Mm. Gotta issue a retraction. Last time we spoke, I talked about a movie called The Girl Next Door.
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned Scarlett Johansson in it.
Mm-hmm.
It was Alicia Cuthbert. I don't know why I got those two mixed up.
What? Those are two very different people. Alicia Cuthbert is one of the hosts on Hockey Night in Canada.
Is she?
No, that's Chris Cuthbert. I was making a hockey watcher joke. You don't watch enough hockey to get my joke, so forget it. Never mind.
Don Strawberry? Don Raspberry? Don Black Cherry? Blackberry? Don Cherry? Don Berry?
Mm-hmm. Don Cherry?
I know about hockey.
Yeah, I know you do. Wait, so you had the wrong female, and all right, that's a retraction. Fair enough. I forgive you. You're blessed.
Because I know my cousin listens to the show, and he's like, he was in film and TV, and he's going to hear that and be like, you're an idiot, David. So.
Right, but then he'll listen a month later to our next conversation and be like, oh, you're not an idiot after all.
And he's going to be like, I would have thought you were an idiot anyway. What's the big deal? It's ding. That's my cut, or what is it? What do you call that? A slate. That's what you call it. A slate. You've been on TV. Action. You've seen the slate?
Yeah, just before this, I had to tape this later with you because I was actually on TV and they were doing sticks in my face. And they have two cameras, and so to synchronize them, they have the sticks that go clap, and so the sound, which is recording one track, and camera A and camera B, they're recording independently, and they're all on the same clock, so they shouldn't have to have any trouble synchronizing, but just in case, they always clap at the start of every take, and with this one team, they always do what they always say, soft sticks, and then instead of a clap, it's always like this, It's the very gentle thing, and it's and I was always like, why the soft stick? So I found out today why they do soft sticks. You may already know this. You already know this?
Because the technology is so good, it doesn't matter. But it's a visual cue for the people working on the show.
They need the visual cue, they need the sound cue, but what they do is, it's because when you have actors who might be in an emotionally worked up state, you don't want to be like, okay, cut down, clack, right in their face, and they're like, I love you so much. And so it's for the performer, this is what I was told, for the performer's sake, they do soft sticks, and then they clap it very close, and it's very gentle and quiet, so that you can maintain that intimate moment that you're having as an actor. I won't tell you what kind of work I was doing.
It involved an intimacy coordinator.
It did. But they have to say soft sticks, so the editor will know not to look for a big clap, but will look for the very subtle one. So anyway, soft sticks today, for
sure. Interesting. I didn't know you contracted for a pornography company. It's fantastic news, yeah.
Sure, yeah, all the time. Yeah, I'm their science advisor. It takes place in space, this one. So it's, you know, there's a lot of questions about viscosity and zero gravity and things like that.
That opening scene to Barbarella, dude. With Jane Fonda. Anyway, go on.
Speaking of which, there is a new paper about the microbiome of semen, which I didn't even know there was a microbiome of semen.
I mean, those ships are out to sea for so long, and those sailors, who knows what they're doing? Who knows what those sailors are doing?
If only that joke had some math in it, it would be even funnier. That was a good joke. So the vagina clearly has a microbiome, and depending on, you know, what populations of what organisms are doing, that can lead to a yeast infection or a urinary tract infection or keep things very healthy. And so people have spent a lot of time thinking about the vaginal microbiome, but the male counterpart has been sort of ignored because people are like, well, what microbiome? Like, there's going to be nothing. It comes out of the prostate and it comes out of this and vas deferens and bang, dumb, you're done.
I mean, it's in your body and there's bacterias in your body. That's plural. There's more than one.
Yeah, but there's not bacterias everywhere. Not everywhere. So anyway, apparently it's just that as it goes down the penis, it picks some stuff up.
Oh.
And there's a study where they looked at the microbiome of semen for a bunch of people that were getting fertility treatments. And then as a control, they looked at a bunch of people who were giving their before sample for a vasectomy. People who had kids and wanted, or maybe they didn't have kids, but they wanted a vasectomy, presumably because their sperm worked. And so they had a bunch of people whose sperm didn't work and a bunch of people whose sperm did work, and they found some significant differences in the microbiome. So there's some indication that what species of bacteria are living in the last third of the penis or wherever the heck it picks that stuff up can affect the fertility of the sperm, which I think is, that's a whole new way of thinking about things. Nobody's ever, in my understanding, nobody's ever considered what bacteria might be doing for fertility in men. And there's this big crisis where fertility's dropping in men and nobody knows why. So maybe it's related.
So if I'm just eating Cheetos and garbage, or is it more than just what I eat?
I don't know how. I mean, I don't know what correlates with what kinds of bacteria get in there.
So it's really just the initial finding that, hey, there is a microbiome, period. That's all they really can...
It's two things. One, there is a microbiome, and two, there's a correlation between men that are not successfully fathering children and men that can father children and what their microbiome populations are like. And so there could be other factors at play. I have to think circumcision, for example, might play a huge role. I don't know. But it opens up a big can of worms, and by worms, I mean penis bacteria.
Well, what about the guys who are getting vasectomies? These are obviously busy guys. You know, these guys are, but I guess people seeking fertility treatment are also busy guys. I'm just saying, what if non-busy people have bad back? You know, if I'm non-ejaculating, if I'm doing it once a year, you know, it's festering.
Right.
As opposed to if I'm doing it every day.
Sure. Does it make a difference? Well, yeah, but I mean, that part of the, I think my understanding from what I read is that the tract of penis where the bacteria are is the tract that's also passed by urine. So it's not, I mean, it's not like this pipe would be sitting empty for months if you were not having ejaculations.
You don't know about my life. I might pee once a quarter.
You might. I have no way of knowing how often you pee.
Well, it's usually more than once a day. In case you were curious. That's wild. So I guess like the way that our kidneys process urine and the way that bacteria all works in that system has an effect on, presumably maybe has an effect on our fertility.
Yeah, maybe. Or maybe it has something to do with what kind of soap you're using. Or maybe it has something to do with how often you masturbate. Or maybe it has something to do with genetics. I don't know. It's just a really interesting new system to look into. I'm glad somebody else is looking into it, because I like hearing about it, but I don't actually want to go be swabbing penises very much. Or measuring bacteria from semen samples. That's not really what I want to do with my time.
Okay, well, that makes one of us.
A lot of people would, I'm sure. I'm sure there are like entire subdomains of Reddit about it, but I'm not one of those people.
You passed along a story this week, which I kind of liked, because people often talk about humble bragging.
Mm.
And it's annoying.
You don't like the humble brag.
It's like, oh, I was just with Queen Elizabeth earlier, and I said to her, yeah, I did scratch my arm. Did you see the scratch on? I don't know, it's a terrible version, but I just mean when people somehow work into the conversation some flex, but it's not the point of the conversation. It's annoying and we hate them.
You mean like, let me give you an example I can think of. Like maybe I was having an evening where I don't feel like I was my funniest self. I was sitting there with Michael J. Fox and with the guy that played Doc. But I just don't feel like I was my best self. You know,
that was a brag like brag though. That wasn't a humble brag.
That was a good story though.
And actually it kind of was self-deprecating because I'm like, I don't find myself at these things. I'm a loser. Why was I here?
But isn't that the humble brag? Isn't that the key to the humble brag is that you say something to make it sound like you're saying something bad about yourself, but really you're silver lining it with the thing that you want people to notice, which is that you're basically one of the characters on Back to the Future?
That's what I was trying to tell everyone. I'm on Back to the Future. That movie is about me.
You're in that movie?
Yes.
How old were you in 1985?
I mean, it doesn't matter. I have a time machine. It's a documentary, Dan. It's not a movie.
Good call. Good call. Yeah, which time? Because I've been to 1985 multiple times, you say.
Which universe, though? Did I open up a multiverse where you can change the past, or is the grandfather principle true?
Do you think they're going to redo those movies and ruin them? Because it occurs to me as you say that Back to the Future is ripe for a remake with Scarlett Johansson, or What's-Her-Face Cuthbert, or Timothy Chalamet. And they're going to wreck it by making it into a multiverse.
I think Michael J. Fox could be into it. I don't think having Alzheimer's would. Maybe he could be like a father figure and his son or something.
Wait, he has Parkinson's. Parkinson's, not Alzheimer's. Parkinson's.
Fuck me. I don't think Michael J. Fox having Parkinson's would affect. Like, he was in Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yeah, he was very funny.
And he clearly has a good sense of humor about it because it was all about Larry David acting the wrong way and making it seem like he was picking on him for having Parkinson's. And Michael J. Fox leaned into it and was like, Larry, you're a terrible person. And then he was like fucking over Larry.
Oh, right. And he actually was a bad person in the show.
Yeah. He was like nodding or shaking his head to like do something to Larry. But then Larry confronted him on it and he's like, it's just Parkinson's. Like, he clearly has a great sense of humor about the thing. So I think he could be in these movies.
Sure. Oh, he'd have to be. He'd have to be. I mean, you'd be crazy not to be. I mean, who knows?
But who would be the young? I mean, there'd have to be like a young kid with the skateboard and the...
They'd stick somebody in there that you've never heard of and don't like.
My favorite part of that movie was when the terrorists come. They're just nondescript Middle Eastern terrorists. They're not from a particular country, but they come...
We don't want to offend.
Well, but they come and they don't even speak Arabic. They just say... And it's like, oh, what were you people thinking? Like, who wrote this?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I was watching Indiana Jones, which is another great movie from the same era. And no, but I was watching Indiana Jones 2. That's the one I'm thinking of, which was not a great movie. It was from the same era. But Indiana Jones 2, The Temple of Doom, is just full of all these creatures that are supposed to be really scary. And I was watching with my kids, and I guess it's a weird sample because they live in my house and I'm always looking at spiders and stuff. But like, first of all, every single one of those creatures I recognized and was like, well, that's not in the right part of the world. And then second of all, they weren't that scary and the kids were not that like fazed by it. Like they're like, oh no, a spider. And you're like, well, those are just tarantulas. Like tarantulas are big, but I know you don't like spiders, but that's not the kind of spider you worry about.
No, I know most, not all, but most tarantulas are very docile. I'm actually like maybe less scared of tarantulas than I am of like funnel web spiders.
Because they're slow and they're not that deadly. They're not even deadly. They're just kind of dangerous a little bit. They're just a little bit ouchy. That's all they are.
I'm scared that one will jump on my face, which makes no sense. Like a squirrel's never jumped on my face and a squirrel could jump on my face much easier than a slow tarantula.
Yeah, see, the thing is, I think I've told you my tarantula story about Trinidad.
Yeah, you saw some spider on a cave wall and it freaked the fuck out of you or something.
No, that's my anguilla pseudoscorpion story.
Oh my, yeah, that is your pseudoscorpion story.
And this is a humble brag. No, it's not even. Oh, we're not even into this yet. Okay, but no, the scorpion story goes like this. I was in Trinidad and I was catching vampire bats and I was with my buddy, Jerry, who was an undergrad at the time and I was a grad student and the woman whose farm we were on catching these bats, said, let me show you around the farm. And so she took us for a walk and she said, this is where we make our own sauce. We grow the limes here. We grow this and that. She made this hot sauce. It was amazing. But then on this tree, there's this giant web and a hole. And she's like, oh, there's a big tarantula in there. And we're like, really? And she's like, yeah, watch this. And then she like starts tapping it with a stick outside. And the spider comes out of the hole, turns the, like, goes over the hump of the hole, goes down the tree, bites the stick, and then goes all the way back up and back into the hole before I started screaming. It was the fastest thing I've ever seen. And the fact that a tarantula could move that fast changed my perception of them forever. I don't trust them that they're always going to be slow. They can be quite fast when they want to be. Sorry, buddy.
I don't like you.
It was terrifying. I screamed. And so did Jerry. We both screamed.
Shrieked.
It was a scream. No, it was higher. It was more of like a, it was like that.
I know that scream well.
Yeah, that's the one.
I know that scream very, very well. Okay. Humble bragging. No one likes it. I was talking to Michael J. Fox about this the other day. He says he doesn't like it either. So a lot of people I know don't like it, which includes Michael J. Fox.
People you hang out with all the time.
Yeah. I mean, we were just talking the other day and the doc was there, you know.
Sure. Of course.
He agreed. They all agreed. Yeah.
Sure.
Then we all marched merrily, linking arms to the bank where I deposited $10 billion. Is there a way to do it better? Is there a way to show off, to highlight how great I am? So like, let's say it's a job interview and I got to like explain to them how great I am without coming off like a dick bag. Is there a way to do it?
Well, if you're using that word in your interview, you're probably doing something wrong, but maybe you're not. What do I guess it depends.
What if I'm interviewing for the semen biome thing and I'm going to have to carry a bag of dicks?
Do you have a bag? I brought one.
We will be studying dicks and I will be requiring a bag to transport them.
Oh, it's okay. I've brought my own bag. And I think you'll find, as I've signed my legal name on this door, on this contract, that I'm telling the truth.
My bag is far superior to the shitty bag that I saw in your lab.
Oh, well, what kind of bag is that, actually?
It's a bag of dicks.
Don't make me open this bag right here in the middle of this interview.
And the samples that you collected are terrible. I've got a much better set of samples in my bag of dicks. It's
so... This paper, these business researchers have come up with something they call humor bragging. Humor bragging is a way of talking about how great you are and working a joke into it that is not a humble brag, but is just like funny and is neutral. And this is supposed to take the edge off when you're saying a bunch of nice things about yourself. So you apply for a job and you say...
Should I self-deprecate or is this something entirely different?
Well, it's not... they didn't use self-deprecate. Yeah, I guess they did. In one of the examples they give, it is a little bit self-deprecating. But you say it as part of like when you're listing off your skills, right? Like, I'm a hard worker. I have a proven track record of doing blah, 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 blah. I work really well with teams, all these things. But you throw a joke at the end of the line and that supports what you're saying. It just makes you stand out a little bit. And the hypothesis they had is that at different stages of the job application process, that's going to help you. So they actually, they wrote a CV, resume. They wrote a resume and they made two versions of it. They were basically identical, except one of them had a couple of jokes in it. And they sent them off to 345 different companies. And then using website traffic and emails and all this stuff, they gauged how much interest they got. And they got way more interest for the one that had the joke in it. And the joke they used was this. So they say, both resumes say, I'm a highly motivated and detail-oriented sales representative. It was a sales job. But then one of them says, I have a proven track record of turning caffeine into productivity output. The more coffee you can provide, the more output I will produce. It's a dumb little joke, but it fits with the theme of like, I work really hard and I'd be somebody you want to work with. And it just caught the attention of the people in the real world who were trying to pick who to hire for the job. And they got more interest than the one that didn't have the jokes.
It's kind of shitty comedy writing. So maybe shitty humor. Like, you don't want to show off. That's bragging. If you write a great joke, then maybe that's back to bragging. It's no longer humor bragging. Especially if you're applying for a job as a comedy writer. Sorry for shouting.
Right. I think if you're applying as a comedy writer, you should avoid comedy at all costs. Because you want to make sure they know they have to pay for that.
be so serious, just show off your accounting skills.
Exactly. The other thing they did was they wrote fake transcripts of a job interview and showed them to people and asked them how much they think they'd like to work with this person. And in the job interview, it's for a pastry chef, and the pastry chef tells a story about, you know, what's a big project you've worked on? Well, there was this one project where a kid really wanted a soccer ball shaped cake, and so we made a soccer ball shaped cake, and the family was really happy, and they wrote a big letter to the restaurant, and it was a big success. But in the humor version of the interview, they say, I'm just glad they asked me to make a cake shaped like a soccer ball and not to actually kick a soccer ball because I'm terrible at soccer. Just a little joke like that.
Terrible joke, but I love it.
But people were like, oh yeah, we definitely want to do this. So the take home from this study is they really believe that they have experimental evidence to support the idea that if you're applying for a job, one way to make your application stand out is to just throw a couple jokes in there to show that you'd be a fun person to work with. And this fits with my philosophy on job interviews, which is that they're not really, I mean, they do care about whether you can do the job. And I guess this is more true in some jobs than others, but fundamentally, they want to know if you're somebody they want to have in the office that they work with. And if they like you, they'll try to find a way to make room for you. And if they don't like you, they're not going to be very motivated to find a spot for you.
Yeah, this idea of fit, corporate fit, thing can be used to discriminate a lot, but there's a lot of truth to it.
Yeah, that's a great point. As you say it, I hear it, because that's totally what ends up happening is people tend to hire people who are very similar to themselves. And they end up having a less diverse office, and then the offices are less productive as a result. And there's experiments that show that if you hire people that are less like you, you'll actually produce better products, even though going to work may be harder some days.
So when I was working in tech, I interviewed, I don't know, 300-400 candidates for the company. I'm just glad that I didn't have to cut off their penises and put them in a dick bag. So now maybe did I not sound like a fancy tech person?
Well, yeah, it sounds like I want to hire you to do my job interviewing because you make jokes.
They weren't all men, so it would have been hard to cut off all their penises. But yeah, when candidates would be jokey with me, I actually wouldn't like it. I think because I'm such a silly person, I would kind of expect like a level of decorum in the interview. And when people would try to appeal to humor, especially when they were like fucking up the problems we were working on, like if we were coding together or I was asking them to walk me through a project they've worked on or whatever the question may be, sometimes I would ask the dreaded algorithms problem, which now has gotten a lot of flack in the tech industry. People don't ask those anymore. Like, walk me through a technical algorithm that you're probably never going to use on the job. Yeah, there's like a big backlash against that. But when people would make jokes when I would do that, I don't know. I wouldn't always like them unless they were already good at the problem, in which case maybe I would like them more.
Yeah, but I mean, so with this one, the job interview, there was one funny line in the whole job interview. That was it. Just one line. And so, you know, I think it's like giving a talk, which is something I have more experience with than going for job interviews, but you want to take it easy, right? What you're trying to communicate is competency, not that you'd be really, really funny, unless, again, you're applying for the comedy job. The other thing is, the other piece of evidence that they got is they watched 4 seasons of Shark Tank, and they looked to see what the success rate was like for people who used humor as part of their presentation, and they found that humorous groups were better. And honestly, humor shows up in a lot of dating studies and attractiveness studies as a reliable indicator of intellect, right? So if you're funny, it's a way of showing that you're intelligent. It's thought to be that that's one of the things that it evolved for, was to show potential mates and competitors and other people how smart you are, is that you can make funny jokes and clever jokes. And I certainly think that the people I interact with, you can't be very funny if you're not very smart. Let's just put it that way.
I am just trying to have sex with you when I make you laugh.
If only you were funny, you'd probably get there. But
Shark Tank.
Yeah, Shark Tank.
I've done in the past on live radio, like a fake Shark Tank where people like call in with their bad business ideas.
It's a great idea.
I wanted to call it the Sea Predator Aquarium.
Uh-huh.
Because I kept on saying we didn't want to get sued by Shark Tank.
No, that's how they make a lot of money, I'm sure.
But I let Tony, my co-host for the segment, talk me into calling it the Cod Pod, which I never liked. It made no sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, it works if you're like, spend some time thinking what's a good analogy for Shark Tank. But yeah, I guess you could call it the
I like Sea Predator Aquarium because it's like the bootleg version.
Yeah.
People would like pitch.
Like, what'd you get pitched?
A necklace with a jar of Nutella on it was the first pitch with a spoon attached to the necklace for when you want a snack on, you know.
Yeah. That's a good idea.
Yeah, it was a bad segment.
Was it? How long did it last?
Too long, like they always do. I don't know, an hour, half an hour, who knows?
Oh, so it was just one time on one show you did it?
No, no, we would do it once a week and finally no one called. Like, people would find it very funny, but we'd like abuse the callers. After about 3 months of that, people stopped calling.
People were like, I'm not calling back, yeah.
And then we, and I've actually had her on this show, but I love her. But we had discovered, one night my producer had me read a story, like an offbeat story about a psychic in England who predicted that Charles would abdicate.
Okay.
But she used asparagus to do it, and she was an asparagus psychic. And I found that to be the funniest thing in the world, that this woman was making appearances on breakfast TV in the UK. Like, she's like a household, she's in every household on the morning show when they want a kook. She's the asparagus psychic. She calls herself the asparamancer.
Whoa. That's, I'm just trying to get my head around that idea. So she's a if you live in England and you wrap your cod in newspaper to eat it, and with chips, you also have a person appearing on your television in the morning who calls herself the what is it?
Asparamancer. Neuromancer, necromancer, asparamance.
Yeah, yeah, but asparagus. And she uses the asparagus to tell her, like a dowsing rod?
Yeah, she tosses them on the ground and how, it's like tea leaves, how they fall is, yeah, whether Queen Elizabeth will rise from the grave, who knows? Yeah, I thought that was so funny. So we booked her on the show. And she was so funny and kooky and weird. And I've interviewed her a lot. She's, again, been on this show. But back to when I was on live radio, later that night, Tony, this guy who was there with me for the Cod Pod Shark Tank Sea Predator Aquarium, he decides he's going to be a carrot psychic. He's also going to be a vegetable psychic. And he called himself the carrot clairvoyant.
Ah, that's even better. I bet she's mad she didn't think of that because that's way easier than a asparamancer.
And he kept on saying, I'm the number two vegetable psychic on the planet. And people would call and they'd be like, my sister, they all knew that it was a joke, but they'd be like, my sister's struggling with money. Like, will she come into money and like solve her mortgage problems or whatever? And Tony would be like, I'm picturing a sister. Do you have a sister? And then the person would be like, yes. And I'd be like, a genius. How does he do it? And then we hang up on the person. Yeah, we would have fun. I don't know why I'm telling you all this.
Did you have a sound effect of carrots falling on the floor? Because I feel like that'd be a real piece of that. Like, well, let me just check. And then you have the sound effect, which is on your soundboard right next to science. No, what is it?
I'm a science. Bing. I don't know. Something like that. We did not have sound effects for that. But in retrospect, it would have added to the carrot clairvoyant, the world's number two vegetable psychic.
That's so funny.
Dan, I'm going to let you go. This has gone on. It always goes on.
It's been a good one. This is a good one. I laughed more in this one than I have in other ones. Why is that?
Because I want to have sex with you a little. I'm hornier.
Ah, it's the tension.
My microbiome's off and I just need a little.
Yeah, now that you're not wearing pants for these, they go, it really changes the energy.
I am wearing sweats, which to me is like not wearing pants.
Poof.
I'm not a big sweats person.
Thank you. We agree on this. So my wife recently bought me some sweats because sometimes I'm cold at night and she's like, you should wear sweatpants. I'm like, nope. Once I become a sweatpants guy.
Oh, you gotta sleep naked. I can't have anything constricting me while I sleep.
Well, it gets cold in my house sometimes. And anyway, let's not get into that. Let's just talk about the sweatpants. So the sweatpants, I can't, like, and the idea that I might leave the house in the sweatpants is just completely a write-off.
Oh, that's abhorrent. Abhorrent.
I'm not doing it. I mean, I might as well wear a hat backwards. What am I?
Yeah. I mean, you may as well, I don't know, wear a, I don't know, piece of poo taped to your cheek. I don't know. Some things.
You might. That is exact. Pull that right out of that bag you brought to the job interview and just stick it on my cheek.
The bag of dicks. I'm just picturing under what circumstances could having a bag of dicks, referring to a bag of dicks, the phrase bag of dicks coming up in a job interview and it going favorably for the candidate. And I think...
I have one right here.
But I just mean any kind of job interview associated with this microbiome of sperm.
Yeah.
It could be a possible circumstance where a bag of dicks may not be a bad idea to bring up in an interview. I can't guarantee it, but I just mean we're closer to, let's say, if you're interviewing to be a teller at a bank.
I think it's important to bring that bag to all interviews just in case. You just don't know.
Did you ever hear that King Missile song in the 90s, Detachable Penis?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure, I had that album.
It was a good one.
There was I hope it's their only album. It's the only one I had. Remember Cheesecake Truck?
No.
Last time I suggested a show which you never watched. This time I'll suggest a song you'll never listen to.
You don't know that I didn't watch it. You don't know that I didn't watch it.
If you'd watched it, you'd be talking about it right now. It's legendary.
I mean, I didn't watch it, but you don't know that I didn't watch it.
have no way of knowing. The song is called Cheesecake Truck, and my kids love it, and it's by King Missile.
Okay. I guess when they're older, you'll play for them Detachable Penis, and it'll be a whole other...
Yeah, we haven't played that yet.
How mature are your kids?
They're not ready for that.
If they're really mature, I say 12, 13. If not, maybe 16. Now 15, 15.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard. The thing is, as the kids get older, I'm like, oh, that's what this age is like. Like, if you say, like, what's a 14-year-old like? I kind of know, but I really know what a 12-year-old is like because I got a 12-year-old, and he's not ready for that song.
No, I don't envy you. My buddy has a 14-year-old.
Mm.
That's a lot. They're mutants, teenagers.
Right. We all are. I mean, it's part of ontogeny, but that said, I'm having a lot of fun with the 12. The 12 years old is super fun. Like, I'm loving it right now. Like, it may get worse, it may get better, I don't know, but right now it's rad.
Okay. Well, they're going to eventually become the age where they're old enough to know how lame you are.
Sure. They don't know that yet. So far, they still think I'm great. It's awesome.
Wish I had someone who thought I was great. Even my cat doesn't like me.
Mm. It's a cat. Get a dog. Dogs love you.
No. Dogs. It's the warm. I don't mind scooping poop, especially cold poop covered in litter. Something about that bag, it's the temperature of the poop, Dan. When you squeeze it and it's warm, that is the most intimate thing you could possibly do with any living creature. Feel the temperature of their excrement. I can't do it. I won't do it.
It is the most intimate thing. It's what a lot of couples do on their wedding night, I think, is
through a bag, through a green compostable bag, feel each other's poop.
pick up each other's poop with compost bags, because it is the most intimate thing that you can do with another creature, as you just said.
It is the most.
So
I think it's almost more intimate than just touching the poop. I think doing it through a bag where all that's really exchanged is the temperature, not the texture, not the smell, not the flavor.
You don't want all those distractions. Eating it would be, you'd miss out on a lot of the texture because you wouldn't be feeling it through a plastic bag.
Exactly. And again, when you touch it, you're exchanging the bacteria of it. It's very real. You know, it's like there's all these other things going on when you physically touch it that in a way kind of take you out of it. But with the bag, it's just the heat.
Just the heat. It's just the temperature alone. It's like you're in one of those chambers that takes away all your other senses, and all you can focus on is the temperature of the excrement that came from that intimate partner right in front of you.
I can't, nay, I won't, and therefore I will not buy a dog. All right, you bag of dicks. We'll see you next time.
See ya.